You're listening to the Modern Web Podcast. For more podcasts, videos, and events, find us online at modern-web.org or follow us on Twitter at modern.web. That's modern.web.
Jerome Hardaway and Tracy Lee discuss the bias associated with AI and how overcoming it is the first step to mindfully integrating AI into your daily software development work.
Hey everyone, welcome to this special series of the Modern Web Podcast. Today we are, and for the next few weeks, we are doing something. What was this that I just did? For those of you watching, I'm doing these weird movements. But we're talking about AI and Jerome. If y'all don't know Jerome, Jerome, you've been talking about AI for like ever.
No, not ever. I think I started really deep diving in the, casual AI around 2021.
You're like, AI curious? Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah, you could say that. And then I started really revving up my work between Microsoft and Vetsu Code. And MyRuck, using more and more AI, more artificial intelligence on the generative side and on the building AI-powered applications starting from small projects like, you know, chatbots for education to my own GPTs to put my own data in so I can just replicate the performance over and over and over again so I don't have to actually manually do that labor. Fully power, you know, apps using computer vision and NLP. So I've been at it from, you know, I've been at it on every level for about three years.
I mean, that's like basically like, you know, how long have you been doing, you know, what's that they say for Svelte, like must have 15 years experience in Svelte, and everyone laughs. So you've basically been doing it forever. And then, you know, everybody watching this who's been doing like predictive AI is like, you people. Anyway, so I digress. But we're basically going to go through this series. And, you know, Jerome kind of stepped through with me previously, like these kind of like different steps in terms of your AI journey for developers. And, you know, I thought that the first step was kind of interesting, this idea of like destroying the AI bias, which, you know, I'm not in that camp, but you say that most developers are kind of in this space right now. So tell us a little bit more about that and what we need to do to destroy the bias.
Yes, yes. Very ironic because, you know, one thing that I did was I leveraged my findings in artificial intelligence and in regards to bias and started making posts on LinkedIn. And yesterday I had there was a very unique back and forth about, you know, where a person was showcasing their bias about AI on LinkedIn. And it was very funny because I was like, this is the first phase of AI bias. One is know your messenger when you're dealing with AI bias. Like when you're coming against someone who is biased, one, do they have that privilege to be biased? Right? You know, it's a lot harder for a person coming into software engineering to be biased as opposed to someone that has 10, 15 years of experience where they have a networking and, you know, around them that can insulate them from the changes at this point on. So that's like, you know, I try to tell juniors and, you know, young people that are asking opinions about this are like, first, look at the messenger when you're dealing with something. Do they have the affordability to be biased towards it, right? So now we went there.
Well, can you afford that though? You know, like, okay, you're saying if you're a senior engineer, you can kind of afford it because you don't have, you know, you're kind of established in your career. So you could get a job, let's say, right now.
Through your network and things like that.
But like if you come in as a new developer, you don't have that luxury. Like you have to be AI.
I mean, we both came up during the JavaScript framework wars, right? Yeah. You know, if you were in tech post, you know, when Node and React and Angular like dropped, you were good. But, you know, for those of us who were just getting the tech at that time, we had to learn those things in order to give us a leg up in the competition because the seniors and mid-level engineers, they weren't learning that stuff. They didn't have the time or they just didn't want to. They thought it was a fad, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I laugh because I see and I hear like the bias, and when I see it in the JavaScript community, I'm like, you know, we were, you know, a toy language designed in, you know, less than 2 weeks to people. Like, we weren't taken serious until maybe 10, 15 years ago. So that's very, you know, it's very crazy to come and like, yo, now we're the people saying, you know, get off my lawn on a new technology. We were, yeah, we were the redheaded stepchildren, like, at one point. So it's very funny when I see that. But you know, also like the bias comes from, you know, especially when you're looking at AI bias, I tend to have a more global view on it, right? On in the Western hemisphere, it's more capitalism driven, so it's more fear driven of, you know, this is going to take my job. What am I going to do if, you know, this can do this, how am I going to handle the other stuff, right? Or it'll never be as good as like an artisan. It's like, you know, going to Olive Garden versus going to your grandmother's, going to an Italian grandmother's kitchen. And I was like, I'm pretty sure you went to a Italian grandmother's kitchen today. She isn't growing her own wheat. She isn't kneading her own wheat into flour. She definitely isn't like waiting till that flour rises naturally. And, you know, she's not cutting each noodle. I'm pretty sure that there's some level of that human in the loop process that has been modernized from where she learned it and where the person who taught her learned it. So just like everything else, everything gets modernized on some level. We keep assuming the human in the loop process isn't going to be there, and that's where our bias comes from. You know, this senior engineer is like, oh, you know, I had to clean up after it. All right, well, just because you're a senior software engineer doesn't mean you're good at prompt engineering. Doesn't mean you're good at communicating. Doesn't mean you don't need to work on those skills. You know, if you think about those engineers that came before us, they were very bad at documentation, right?
Okay, so that's true. So it's like the first step, right, is like senior engineer or engineer, like type something in and they're like, ChatGPT sucks. You know, and that's like their attitude, and then they discount it. But yes, you know, then it's like, oh, well, I changed what I asked it to do, and then it was okay. So it's like a lot of people will never come back and tell you that part
if they do that, right? Uh-huh. You hear the negative connotation, you know, because it's loud, but you don't hear the, oh, well, what I needed was training on how to communicate with this because I communicate with ChatGPT like how I communicate with documentation, which is barely if at all, right? So, you know, we have those problems where, you know, one, the bias is coming from a person that can afford to have a bias. Two, the bias is coming from a person who is assuming that because of their experience level that this should be easy. It's no different. I mean, once again, we're JavaScript engineers by trade. We have seen people come in from other stacks and, you know, try to learn or try to, you know, play down JavaScript because, like I said, to them it was a toy language created in less than 2 weeks. So, and then they come in like, yo, this is hard, especially when ES2015 drops. you know, it was JavaScript's the only, I'm probably wrong on this, but to my knowledge, JavaScript's one of the few languages that has a superset of the language done not once, but twice to try to make it easier and more comfortable, right? JavaScript has CoffeeScript and TypeScript, right? Uh-huh. I don't know anybody who's still using CoffeeScript, but pretty much everybody in enterprise level is using TypeScript and not CoffeeScript. So that is, that's how I, you know, look at it, right? Is people who are assuming that there's going to be a crossover of their skill from one to the next. And then when it doesn't work as intended, they're like, ah, boo, it's, you know, it's trash. Also, you know, it's a lot like how, you know, it's still in its infancy. So making a, you know, huge judgment on it right now in this time frame is immature, right? Mm-hmm. You can't make something that's been generally available for 2 years and make a fool your entire opinion about it. It's bad, especially when I have a philosophy of I don't listen to people, I listen to data, and I listen to shareholders. Mm-hmm. So what I notice is, hey, the people are loving it and the shareholders are loving it. That means I love it, right? And the same way with data, same way with JavaScript. When it came to front end technologies, like people were betting on it. That's where I bet now. See, you have your Chick-fil-A, and now I want to get some Chick-fil-A.
Yummy.
But yeah, so that's where I see the biggest pain points of bias coming from people. Like either they can afford it, either they assume that their skills should translate easily to it without actually, emptying their cup.
Yeah.
Or, it's
understanding that you need to, like, it's number one saying, open up your mind and stop just writing something off because you shouldn't write off. And then the second thing is understanding that it's a new skill that you need to learn.
Yeah, you got to be a learn it all. You can't come in here thinking that, you can't go into AI thinking that your skills should be able to translate, right?
Yeah.
And you can't come in, you have to look at you're the human in this loop of tools. Yeah. You have to see where you fit in. A great example that I brought up was how Gucci, Chanel, Hermes, how all of them are luxury brands. They are known for, based upon their cost, they're very bespoke experiences that they have with people, but they are all embracing AI. They know how to make their training and their learning, and they know now how to make the seamless virtual assistant to real life assistant experience in order to use all the data they have on their guests, on their customers, to be able to make a really great experience. And that is where the human in the loop protocol comes. It's not supposed to replace you. It's supposed to replace certain things that you do. Now, the fear that people are coming from that is part of the bias, especially in the West, is companies that are trying to are using their extensive data and then, using that data to try to replace people. That is going to eventually backfire because, once again, people trust people. They want to know that there's a person on the other line. And while there may be productivity, there are still people that are involved in those steps. There has to, when people do not do human in the loop protocols, it always comes back to bite them. That's not, that's not hyperbole, that's fact, right? Mm-hmm. It has to be. So that's one thing that people should, where like it's going to free you up for our deeper protocols in your work, deeper work. I think that, that's one thing I've seen in my own career.
It's just like frameworks, right? Like, no, you don't need to hand roll your own CLI. You don't need to, create every single file. Like if you're using
build your own garbage collection. Those programmers probably think we're not real programmers. They're like, it's very get off my lawn-ish when I hear, the AI bias. Cause it's, it's like how when people are like, the kids, they're TikTok and stuff. I'm like, y'all sound like our parents when we were on CDs and stuff like that. Like, I remember how my folks would look at the newspaper and shake their head when a new DMX album would come out. And now that's how we are when we're looking at newfangled AI tools and stuff like that. And, and just like anything else, there's going to be an explosion. Then there's going to be a market correction. And people are going to see that, AI is just another, tool. And as it gets implemented in systems, you're going to be seeing the real strength in your workflows at the beginning levels is going to be your productivity.
And what advice do you see though? Like besides just get off my lawn.
Biggest get off my lawn fear in the West. In the United States, when I go towards Europe, you are starting to see the biases are, a lot more concerned, a lot more grounded in reality. Like they're closer towards safety and security, ensuring that, companies can't run amok, which is why one of the reasons why Mistrial AI is doing so well. When you're going closer towards the east, eastern hemisphere, though, you're not really seeing a lot of these biases. You're seeing a lot of, okay, where does this fit and where do I put the human at, right? So like that
so is they're embracing where, it more.
I wouldn't say embracing it. I would say they're just looking at, you know, where, you know, because companies everywhere are embracing it, but people is the real pain point. And they're just looking at, all right, where can I use this to free up my time? One of the products, one of the things I looked at for Vetsu Code was how people in Asia were leveraging AI to free up more time with instructors so we can have, so the instructors could have more one-on-one time for critical exercises with their students in Japan and Taiwan. And I was like, okay, that's very interesting how they were utilizing AI for the stuff that was going to be in the core curriculum. That's where artificial intelligence lived. But now when it came to the personalization and the critical thinking and getting it to really stick to the student, that is when, you know, the human came in. That's, I was like, so okay, that's a very good use case. I like that. That's very, is very unique how they're doing that. There's a lot of schools now, and they, you know, when it comes to education, particularly in a lot of private schools, things that are, you know, doing that, or higher education such as Harvard and Yale, that's how they're approaching artificial intelligence. So where we have to do is that with our biases, we have to keep looking at, you know, where does this fit in my game and where does it not fit? So that this is the place I can shine, right? Because like as a, for me, like if I'm looking, if AI dropped today, I'm like, okay, so I don't have to worry about the syntax of code and stuff, but I can think about the type of feature. I can think about the ticket. I can think about how this feature will match this brand, right? Like, you know, versus
great like spending the extra hour doing something.
Great example for me is I made a ticket of, you know, we needed our submit call to action larger for Vetsu Code, and that didn't, what I wanted was like, that's kind of lame. Let me sit down and think about this because it's going to be much easier to do now that we're using Copilot and stuff like that. Like, so you know what? Whenever someone, you know, does this, I want it to rain military medal emojis. You know, and it took an extra 30 minutes to think about that. And everybody was like, what? I was like, yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be quirky. It's going to be nonprofit-y. People are going to love it. And of course, the percentage of people, the percentage of complaints of not seeing the submit success feature dropped. And the amount of people just re-messaging us, telling us they love it, like quadruple. And you were like, yo, that's so much fun. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. But so that's where I see, you know, it enabling more human creativity, more thinking, like even on the most basic level, like, okay, now I can think about learning how to learn in the age of AI versus just learning how to learn. And how do we compete with it? No, how do we collab with this, right? And that's one of the issues with the bias is people aren't looking at it as from a collaborative standpoint. They're looking at it from a competitive standpoint. This is going to replace me. No, it's not going to replace you. It's going to replace a person that doesn't use it, right? Who has taken a collaborative approach of learning with artificial intelligence, learning how, where the skill set of, where skills that they can transfer to the AI and what skills they need to be focused on building up that the AI can't do, right? Yeah. So like that is how, that's how it, the process should be consistently and continuously as you're growing, right?
Sometimes it's hard to bridge the gap between business objectives and tech implementation, and it can get messy. This dot is trusted by top names like Meta, Google, and T-Mobile, and they love helping business leaders fulfill their strategic digital initiatives. Check them out at thisdot.co. One more time, that's thisdot.co.
So you're talking about like destroying this bias, and then you're talking, you know, the next part in our series is like using ChatGPT or other things, like improving workflows, right? So
yes,
going a little bit deeper into like best ways to improve workflows. And so, you know, now that you've gone over the idea that like maybe I don't need this, now you're actually using it. Okay, great. Third step is prompt engineering, which is just giving it better prompts or talking to the machine better.
Prompt engineering, understanding the system message. Like, you know, I really say I first time when I'm having a conversation with somebody, I ask them, have you built a GPT? Like, yeah. Have you gone in and built a system message? Have you added data to the GPT? Does it know? Do you have a specialized tool that you can go to that can replicate your work for you? So that's the, for me, that's the next step is like when it comes speaking to someone that's new, all right, have you used it? Have you learned how to use it better? Have you built a GPT? Now that you've built a GPT, let's go into the API layer. And then once we go there, let's go deeper. Like what part of the API are we going to use, right? You know, there's, you know, we can talk about deep learning. We can talk about NLP. We can talk about computer vision. We can talk about all the components of the artificial intelligence AI scope that you can be using to build, you know, a good product. So that is where we, that's how I tend to break that process down. Then after that, we start talking about, you know, tokenization, guardrail, safety, artificial.
That's the first step, that's the fourth step. That's like building with the APIs.
Building directly. Leveraging them. Yeah, directly in there in the API ecosystem, seeing how you as the user can build things out with code and leveraging these APIs. And then, only then do we start with SLMs and then LLMs. Like, you know, you may not know, you know, especially right now.
LLMs and SLMs, which I guess we, you know, is this like our pitch podcast to say like, you should listen in and tune in for the next 5 weeks because you should. And just maybe, like follow us in this journey.
Yeah.
You know, really going deep into like some of these topics. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially, you know, in this era, I'm very excited now for this year because it's like, hey, guess what? You may not need an LLM. You might need an SLM. And then when we talk about SLMs, like Phi-2 and things that people can grok as something small, not this huge thing that has all of the like has all the knowledge. Like, yo, here's a small language model and you can, you know, understand this a lot better. You know, we have these opportunities to, you know, walk, crawl, walk, run with people on every layer of the stack and every layer of artificial intelligence. And it's making it more fun for me, and it's also making it, you know, maybe we can find a way to, you know, make our tooling better, faster, cheaper. Because, you know, I've been telling people when it comes to AI, the same thing that came with AI is going to with cloud, the same thing that came with AI. One, everybody's going to be crazy with AI and wants to learn how to use it, just like when it came with AWS. Then everybody's going to want to talk about how to do AI, just like the AWS, was like, hey, let's do this cheaply. How do we do this cost effectively? Then it's going to be, how do we do this safely? Right? The same thing. People are like, oh, I don't want DDoS attacks coming through and breaking my app. Also, don't want to have to pay $10,000 monthly AWS bill. So those careers came out of cloud, right? When we went from on-prem to cloud, it's the exact same thing that's going to happen with artificial intelligence.
I mean, you're just like, this like goes straight into the topic of this talk, which is destroy the AI biases. You're basically saying like, look at all of the jobs that are going to be created because everybody now has to manage AI and the cost of it and the security and the data and the education, everything.
The education component. I have had more friends leave higher education and go into artificial intelligence companies with the goal of training these models in the past 2 years.
Ooh, than that's any. Cool.
Yes. And, you know, the people like, I would have never saw this coming. I had one friend, she was like, you know, this is the first Christmas where no one sent me an email about their grandma dying. So it's kind of cool. I was like, you know, they're lying. She's like, of course I knew they were lying. Like, you know how many grandparents die around finals? She's like, she said all of them apparently. So she was like, but this, you know, I get 8 hours.
Grandmother dying.
Yeah.
I feel like my babysitter's grandmother's going to die next week and that's why she's not going to show up because, you know. This week she had one issue and another issue. Anyway, let's just say it's been, you know, 6 weeks of issues and I'm beginning to question.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. But yeah, so then it's wild. So yeah, no,
seriously, if her grandmother dies next week, I'm gonna be like, Jerome. Seriously.
you can't have my nanny. Mine is awesome. So, you know, you're not gonna be able to have ours. Tara fight you. We had to throw a knife in the middle. Two moms enter, my mom leaves, you know. but yeah, so but that's where I see the experience, that's where I see with AI and why we have to do, you know, we have to defeat these biases, because people, more we have these biases, the longer it's going to take people to be able to see how to utilize these for the betterment of their lifestyles and their careers, right? The more we're fighting,
like people who have gotten past this like bias stage, right, and who are like using ChatGPT or maybe in like level 2 and 3, like using and getting better at prompt engineering, right? Like I see a lot of, you know, senior engineers being like, look, this can refactor a test faster than me, so I'm going to use it for that.
Or even just make the test. I mean, JavaScript engineers on like the level are so bad with writing like tests. They're like, yo, if it shows up on the screen, it works. Why do I need a test for this? But you still need unit tests and things like that to build trust into your code, right?
Well, but I think this is, yeah. Well, you know how like for React, for example, right? Like there's, yeah, you know, you need to migrate away from enzyme tests. So everybody's like complaining about how much of a pain that is. But it's like, you know, somebody could do it for you, like
machine. Yeah, the AI could do that for you. Yeah. You don't have to worry about it. Yeah. And you know, I guess when it comes to the, like the real battle is biases. With AI bias is those of influence. It's one of the reasons why, like, I prefer to have these conversations on LinkedIn versus the conversation, or you know, in podcasts versus, you know, on Twitter, where, you know, everybody's just trying to get, you know, engagement so they can get some Elon's money. when you're talking on LinkedIn, it forces people to look at it through the scope of work versus their personal opinion, and we have to, or how they feel, and you see it every day in every type of situation. Like, hey, what's going on is really a personal opinion, and from someone who really doesn't have experience. If that conversation gets deeper, like I said, the conversation that I had on LinkedIn, to me, I just was like, we're just gonna agree to disagree, because you're arguing based upon some of your friends having problems, and there's an Italian grandmother, and you're hating on Olive Garden. What did Olive Garden ever do to you? I'm like, I have no like real skin in the game, because like you're not gonna change my mind because I've made money using artificial intelligence.
Yeah. It is so great that what it can do, you know, like, I mean, some high level architects, for example, use it for just brainstorming, like, yes, okay, what are the three different ways, whatever, or, you know, talking to some C-level executives, they use it for, hey, you know what, I need to be educated on, like, you know, CIOs, for example, let's say CTO, CIO level, I need to be educated on this new topic. So give me the top 5 articles and summarize them. And then that allows them to do the grunt work, you know, that like an admin would probably do, and probably not do such a great job at it, to be honest. No offense to admins. But what I mean is an AI who has all the knowledge in the world, let's say of the internet, versus like somebody who is mediocre at prompt engineering.
It makes your admin better as well. Yes. Because now you can tell your admin.
He could do that too. Yeah, yeah, and it saves her time.
Yes, and it helps you create clarity. Like, I know the difference, like night and day, between working with people who are dealing with AI, but they're not using AI at work, yeah, and people who are saying, oh, we're dealing with AI and we're using AI at work. I can tell you, all right, I can tell, okay, so these people are actually knowing what they're doing, and these people do not. Like, you know, my program manager, Yumi for Vetsu Code, she uses artificial intelligence, and she's a monster, right? Mm-hmm. She tells me things like, you know, I told you all the joke, you know, when I was doing the GitHub course about how she has a Jerome GPT. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's like, well, she was like, well, first and foremost, there's so much things, so much writing and blog posts and, you know, stories about you and podcasts you've been on. It's really easy to create mm-hmm. your voice, so that way when that's I need so you to do something when I need you to do something, instead of having you do it, I could just throw it in here, and then I can have you proofread it, and you'll, you know, red light, green light of it. And more often than not, I'll read it and I'm like, yeah, it sounds like something I would do. And so it's very funny, you know, about how the more work you can do, the easier these come over time. And I think that's what another thing that the bites, you know, when you're starting to evergreen, the AI isn't going to be as strong because there's nothing there. But as you build up those data stores of what you're trying to do, it will become better, right?
You know what would be so good, though? Here's what I'm thinking, which is totally weird, okay? But this would be helpful for me. Which I mean, it's probably like violate some sort of SEC violation, you know, but like it would be amazing if you could take like all of my husband's financial decisions on like all the stuff he does in the stock market. And I could be like, okay, what am I supposed to do now? You know, like what if something happened to him? Right. And they're based on this is what he would do. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I should do that then.
Well, that's, I will give you one further. What if based upon what your husband said, and then what the app says, all right, this is the probability of it, right? It gives you a closer one-on-one analysis of what it thinks, what you want to do, what your husband said, and then what it's like, okay, this is based upon the data, it's the show. Like, this is what, you know, it's like, you know, farmers don't go to almanacs anymore to handle, like, figure out when's best time to do what crop. They're using data real time these days.
Yeah.
So let's not... let's, you know, leverage it the same way. But that's how, you know, that's going to be the future, right? People are going to be building data collections of themselves. You have like your own personalized GPT of sorts, where you're based on your decisions and your spending. You know, it's already happening. Your app,
doctors should do this, honestly, although they might get sued too, right? But like,
well, HIPAA, they're working on a more HIPAA, you know, proof ways to do this, right? But it's gonna, you know, between the doctors and the insurance companies, it's gonna help make a more cohesive unit and keep people more honest based upon your health. And you know, we'll be. If we use AI the way it is intended,
as a tool,
modifier, as a tool.
Can we say as a partner, or is that like two?
I mean, it doesn't have a heartbeat, right? So like in the end, I'm like, it's a
co-pilot, your partner in coding now. Come on.
I mean, that's called marketing, right? I didn't get to make this. I mean, no offense, if I got to make the decision, you still have Flippy. Clippy would have been co-pilot. Like, they really dropped the ball on that.
They really did.
I was like, I would have loved to have Clippy. Like, you know, just ask Clippy.
And Microsoft Clippy next earnings call. We increased our revenue by 10% due to this swag store we created.
Yes, the swag. They just, you know, I heard there's a story on Business Insider about how a Clippy ugly Christmas sweater went for like $75,000 on eBay.
Oh my gosh, it's so crazy.
Yeah, I'm like, we really fumbled that bag, right?
I'm just gonna like make a Clippy Christmas sweater and start selling it. Cool. So, you know, what resources can we give people to kind of find out more, I suppose, about, like, you know, if you're in the bias phase and you kind of want to learn more and this has convinced you to, you know, stop being biased around this, or just, you know, the bias has been destroyed, like, where do people start going to like dig in?
I think going to a place or for something like this is premature. Well, not premature, like post-mature. People aren't really building for the biased people, harsh reality is like, hey, you know, you're going to use it or not, but you will end up having to be on this train eventually, right? That's how people are looking at it. You're going to, this train is coming, either get on it today or you get on the last one later on.
Yeah.
But how I would recommend is, you know, start small, right? Yeah. You do not have to, you know, solve your biggest problems today, right? Just like my favorite thing, my favorite small project that I've done is I have a transcribe app on my iPhone. I'll just take a voice memo and then I'll take that voice memo, transcribe it, and then I'll throw it in ChatGPT 3.5. I'm like, hey, make this, turn this into something that can be as a tweet with the tweet character limits, right? And it does it, and it does a better job than me sitting there editing. And then I can go back and I'm like, hey, I don't like that. Let's edit this, that, and a third. And, oh, and now I sound very intelligent, not like a country bumpkin. That's super, like for me, that's super cool to be able to go and improve something so small and significant that I know that but I know people are going to see it. I know that X is training their AI on it. So, you know, which is like the weirdest thing I tell people, like you're either a part of the algorithm or not. You have people who are paying for X premium and, you know, aren't understanding that Grok has access to their Twitter information. So they're, you know, inadvertently training an AI, whether they choose to believe it or not.
AI is training the AI though, which is so weird because like it's this weird loop, right? Like all of a sudden AI is going to be training AI. Do we really
that's going to be the next level though. Like we're already doing that on an enterprise level where this bot has higher permissions than this bot. And if the user, i.e. the customer doesn't have the customer's problem can't be solved by this bot will, you know, transfer the information they've gathered to the separate bot. You can go 2 or 3 levels of severity with bots before you get into a human, like these days in enterprise level. It's true. I've seen it. It's pretty awesome what we've been able to do with, like, you know, having bots be able to talk to each other and, you know, store data and hire. Because, you know, even when you're keeping that human in the loop, each human might not have the same level of access that another human would, right? Mm-hmm. So we got to still, you know, separate that those security levels for zero trust protocols. So, you know, bot A is being controlled by human A who doesn't have those same access to those same things, whereas bot B as human B has higher levels of access to certain tools and can do something. Like human A, they can't, you know, they can give you a 5% discount, but human B has the access, you know, to wipe the bill clean, give you a return, apologize.
The other day I ate this really bad sandwich over the weekend and I asked to have it remade and she said, I'll have to go talk to my manager. And I was like, did you really have to go talk to human B? Why doesn't human A have the rights to just make me another sandwich?
Because of the cost. But that's how we do that already as humans.
You know,
We do that as humans already. We're like, oh, you know, a problem gets solved beyond a person's pay grade to make that call. Someone else jumps in to make that call, right? How do we?
$50. Or however much the sandwich was. Okay. Well, you know, also pitching, stay tuned because again, in the next few weeks, we're going to be going through this with Jerome and you'll get little mini courses on the kind of outline that we provided. And we'll see you soon. See you in a week, y'all.
This podcast is sponsored by This.Labs, a framework agnostic consultancy that specializes in JavaScript. You can find them at this.co/labs. That's THISDOT.co/labs. For all of your friends and-